Shabbat Shavuot to everybody. And as you heard, the topic of the shiur is one that is not so familiar to most people. When I was sharing the topic with a number of people over the last week or so, people didn't know the answer to the question. And we're all familiar with the mitzvah Bikurim. The mitzvah Bikurim is a mitzvah that starts on Shavuos. The Torah refers to Bikurim, to Shavuos as Yom HaBikurim. And that is the first fruits that are brought to Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash. It's an obligation that a farmer declares gratitude. He's supposed to also share the a specific series of psukim that he says, thank you, Hashem, for the fruit you've given me. This year is, of course, a year of Shemitah, Tavshin Pei Beis. We had yesterday in the Parsha the details of the mitzvah of Shemitah. During Shemitah, we have many halachos restricting what you can do as far as working the ground. We also have halachos that dictate the fruit, that the produce of Shemitah that does grow has to be made available to everybody. It's considered hefker. And therefore, the question is, does the mitzvah of Bikurim apply in a year like this, in a year of Shemitah? One of the many issues that we'll discuss is the fact that a farmer is going to declare when he comes to bring Bikurim, I have brought the first fruit that you, Hashem, have given me. Well, the fruit is actually considered hefker. It's not owned by the owner. It's given to everybody, as the Pasuk tells us in the parasha we heard yesterday, and so on. So it's really meant for everybody. How can the farmer offer such fruits as Bikurim, let alone express gratitude for his being given these fruits? So there are a number of interesting halachic aspects to this issue. We'll see how much we can cover. We probably won't be able to do any one of the issues in depth because each one could be its own shear to develop further, but I'd like to at least provide a bird's eye view, a survey on the various issues that come to play in this very interesting question. Do Bikurim and Shemitah coexist, or are they in conflict with one another? Okay, full disclosure, there is an issue, which again, Rabbi Shor should get a lot of credit for, an issue of Torah to go, which is going to come out for Shavuos and disseminated widely. There isn't a section in that issue on Shemitah, and this topic is actually written up. So if you want to review this year and think about it some more, make sure to read it when it comes out, Torah to go for Shavuos. Okay, let's begin, as you can follow me in the sheets, which I hope you have. The first source is from the Rambam in Hilchos Matnos Aniyim. And this is simply declaring the fact that during the year of Shemitah, the produce is not subject to the laws of Trumos u'Maisros. We know that typically, if they have produce growing in the land of Eretz Yisrael, you have to give Truma, you have to give Maiser. And the halacha is that when something is hefker, it's not owned by a particular person, then even a person who takes it and is takes title is not required to give the various trumos and maisros. And therefore, the Rambam tells us that the Shnasa Shemitah is an example of that. Says the Rambam, Shnasa Shemitah kula hefker. During the year of Shemitah, everything that is produced is considered hefker, ve'enba, lo truma, lo maisros, lo rishon, lo sheni, lo maiser ani. Different years have different types of maiser. None of that applies during the Shemitah year. How do we know that something which is hefker doesn't have the halacha of trumas and maestros? So you have source number two, the Bar Tanura in Seches Peah quotes the pasuk that we use to derive this halacha from. The pasuk says in Parshas Re'eh, I believe, regarding the giving of the maeser ani to the poor person who the Torah describes as a levi, and the Torah says uvah levi. The Levi is coming to collect his Maiser Ani. He who doesn't have a share with you, he has no stake with you, meaning to say that it's yours and he has no access to it without the fact that you are graciously giving it to him, which excludes something which is Hefker, which everybody is on equal footing, which means it's available for him as well, in which case there's no halacha that you have to give him Maiser Ani. So therefore, we go from that to all the trumas and maestros do not apply during the times when something is hefker. There is a special drasha that Rashi quotes in Chumash and Parshas Mishpatim, specifically relating to Shemitah, when the pasuk says about Shemitah, that you shall abandon the fruit, the yisram, and the leftover tochel chayas hasadeh. It talks about the poor people eating it, and then it talks about the beasts of the field. So Rashi quotes the drasha that there's an equation between what is given to the poor and what is given to the wild animals, just as the chaya, the wild animal, eats without having to take off maaser. So it is when the poor eat it during Shemitah, there's no need to have maaser taken off. So we have another source specifically regarding Shemitah that there's no obligation of truma or maaser. Many achronim, this is again beyond the scope of our shir, many achronim question why you need a separate drasha, as we just see in Rashi from the pasuk of the Yisram Tochel Chayas HaSadeh. We can always fall back on the drasha that we mentioned before, that anything which is hefker doesn't have a din from Musamaisis. What do you need a special din regarding Shemitah? And the many interesting creative answers, but again, that would go beyond the scope of this year. Now that we know that the produce of Shemitah is not obligated in Truma and Maiser, so one could naturally think that so it is with Bikurim. Bikurim is one of those mitzvos that you could call mitzvah tuya ba'aretz. It's a function of what grows in Eretz Yisrael. And if the Torah says that you don't have to give truma and maaser during the year of Shemitah, for whatever the two reasons that we mentioned, so it would be with Bikurim. But it's not as simple as that. Because, as you'll notice in source number 4, Tosfos in Baba Basra says the following suggestion. Do we refer to Bikurim as a mitzvah tuya ba'aretz, that is to say, it's an obligation based on the fruit itself, or should we consider Bikurim a chovas gavra, an obligation of the individual, just that it's only an individual who happens to have land that some first fruit grows from that land? Tosus brings net a number of proofs that we don't classify Bikurim as a mitzvah tuya ba'aretz. Unlike Truma Umayser and Challah, for example, where Tosus says the actual produce has the obligation on it that it should be brought, it should have Truma separated from it. As we know, if you don't take off Truma, the status of the produce is considered tevel, and a person is violating a very serious transgression if he eats what is called tevel. That halacha, that status of tevel, does not apply with regard to Bikurim. The halacha is you have to take the first fruit and bring it to Yerushalayim, but if you don't do it, there is no halachic ban, you could say, on the rest of the produce. And that shows, among other proofs Tosis brings, that we don't classify Bikurim as a chovas haguf. It's just that it's only a person who has land who has to bring it, just as a person doesn't have to put tzitzis on their garment that they don't have a garment of four corners. So it's a chovas gavra, but it has a condition that it has to come along with somebody who has a particular garment. So a person has the obligation on themselves to bring Bikurim if they have land in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, we can't necessarily put Bikurim under the same category as mitzvahs like Truma or Maaser, and therefore the question comes back, do we have the mitzvah Bikurim during Shemitah? One could perhaps have gleaned an indication in this question from a Mishnah Bikurim. Again, Bikurim is a Mishnah that we like to learn around this time of the year, leading up to Shavuos and beyond. And the Mishnah Bikurim talk about differences and similarities between Bikurim on the one hand, Truma and Maaser on the other. The Mishnah, in source number 5, gives us a number of differences that Bikurim has vis-a-vis Truma Umaisa. So the Mishnah mentions the fact that, for example, Bikurim can exist already while the fruit is attached to the tree, whereas Truma Umaisa, you can only begin to do the obligation after you detach it, and it gets to a certain point called Gemar Malacha. That's when you take off the Truma Umaisa, but not when it's on, when it's still growing. Another nafkamina, says the Mishnah, a person can make the entire field Bikurim. Other nafkaminas, as the Mishnah goes on to list, specific halachas that apply to Bikurim and don't apply to Truma Umayser. And the question is, why doesn't the Mishnah mention something else? If we assume that the mitzvahs Bikurim does apply during Shemitah, then wouldn't the Mishnah want to also mention among the list the fact that Bikurim applies during Shemitah? Unlike Truma Maaser, as we said, which does not apply during Shemitah, the fact that the Mishnah does not mention that in the list might be an indication that Bikurim, in fact, is not applicable during Shemitah. In that regard, it's the same as Truma Maaser. That would also be the sense that we get from the language of the Meiri, one of the Rishonim, in source number 6. The Meiri makes the following comment. in the Mishnah Gemara in Bivamis, which discusses the Mishnah Bikurim, Beno Heges, or No Agim, Truma Ubikurim, B'chol Shana V'Shana, Chutz Mishnas HaShmita She'en Adam Zareh Ba. The Meiri says, matter-of-factly, that Truma and Bikurim apply every one of the years of the Shemitah cycle, with the exception of the year of Shemitah, where a person doesn't plant. So the Meiri is pretty much clear on this question. There is no mitzvah Bikurim, although it exists 6 of the 7 years, but not during Shemitah. Now, if we were to really look at where this topic gets a lot of discussion and a lot of attention, so anyone who is familiar with reading Chumash with Rashi would come across a fascinating comment tucked away by Rashi in Chumash, which seems to weigh in and settle this matter definitively. And this is an interesting Rashi that's found in Parshas Mishpatim. The context of the Rashi is a series of psukim where the Torah mentions many mitzvos. And in that list, you have the mitzvah of Shemitah. The first mention of Shemitah in Chumash is in Parshas Mishpatim, 2 psukim that you have here in source number 7. The pasuk says, Sheish shonim tizvas artzecha v'yasavtas tvuasa, the 6 years you can plant and gather your produce, v'ashevius, and the 7th year tishmetanu unetashta, and so on. That is to say that you abandon the fruit, let it be hefker, and it be eaten by the poor, and so on. Now, just after mentioning the mitzvah of Shemitah for the first time in Chumash, the Torah goes on to talk about a number of other mitzvahs. First, the Torah tells us there's a mitzvah of Shabbos to rest on the 7th day of the week. The next pasuk that follows, Sheishes yom ta'aseh ma'asecha v'yom ha'shvi'i tishbos. A little further on, the Torah talks about the mitzvah of Shalosh V'golim. Shalosh V'golim v'chogi v'shana. The Torah mentions Chag HaMatzos, mentions Chag HaKotzir, which is Shavuos, and Chag HaSukos, and tells us that during those 3 times, Shalosh Pamim v'shana, Yirah Kol Zchur Chal Pnei Hashem Elokecha. That is the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. And then, toward the end of the section, the very last pasuk, next to last mitzvah in the section, Reishis Bikurim Ad Mascha Tavi Beis Hashem Elokecha. The first mention of the mitzvah Bikurim is found here in Parshas Mishpatim, again juxtaposed with, as you saw earlier, the mitzvah of Shemitah. Now Rashi makes a few interesting observations about why the Torah juxtaposes the mitzvah of Shabbos every week, the mitzvah of Shalosh Regalim of Aliyah L'Regel, and then the mitzvah Bikurim soon after mentioning the mitzvah of Shemitah. So let's go through the various comments of Rashi, and it's an interesting thing that Rashi says something that we'll see does not seem to appear anywhere that we know in Chazal. The first comment of Rashi has to do with why the Torah mentions the mitzvah of Shabbos every week, right after Shemitah, and Rashi makes it clear why the Torah does it. Af b'shana shviyis lo ti'ake Shabbos bereshis mikoma. Even during the Shemitah year, the mitzvah of Shabbos does not get uprooted. We have a mitzvah to observe Shabbos every week. Why would we have thought otherwise? Rashi continues. Shelo tomar. You shouldn't think. The whole year has a Shabbos status. We know that Shemitah is called Shabbos Hashem, Shnas Shabboson. So therefore, I would think, lo tinag ba Shabbos Bereishis. We don't have to observe the weekly Shabbos because we're under the umbrella of the Shnas HaShemitah, the sabbatical year. So the Torah says, no. Even though the year is a year of Shabbos, you still have to observe the Shabbos every week. That's one comment of Rashi. Rashi goes further and discusses the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel. And Rashi in Pasuk Yud Zayin, why is the Torah mentioned that you go up 3 times a year for the 3 festivals of pilgrimage for Aliyah L'Regel right here in this section in Parshas Mishpatim? Lefisha Iyim B'dabe B'Shviyas, we're discussing the larger context is the mitzvah of Shviyas, the year of Shemitah. Hutzach Lomar Shul Yistars V'Gomi M'Koman. The Parsik wants to tell you, don't think that the mitzvah of Aliyah L'Regel would not exist during the Shemitah year. Why would we think it wouldn't exist? One could certainly recognize why. Because during the Shemitah year, there is no cycle, the normal cycle of agriculture, where you plant and you harvest what you plant. That doesn't happen during the Shemitah year. There's no planting allowed. And therefore, you might think, since the Torah connects Shalosh V'Golem to the various seasons, as we know, the Zman HaAviv, the Chag HaKotzir, when you harvest, and the Chag HaAsif, and that's not a good match with the Shnas HaShemitah. So the Torah says, nevertheless, you celebrate the Regalim, you go up to visit Yerushalayim, Shalosh V'Golem. That's the second comment of Rashi. And here we get to our focus. Rashi continues on the Pasuk Reishis Bikurim Ad Mascha. Rashi tells us why mention Mitzvah Bikurim right over here in Parshas Mishpatim for the following reason. Af HaShviyis Chayeves BeBikurim. Rashi goes on the limb and tells us, the Torah wants you to know, although you might have thought otherwise, and we began to think about ourselves why otherwise, so that Rashi tells us that, in fact, there is a mitzvah bikurim during Shemitah. And Rashi goes on to give us some of the details of how it goes about when a person sees something in the field and they label it as bikurim. Rashi doesn't directly tell us why we would have thought otherwise. So I looked a little bit on my own, I did a little research, and I found there is a ksaviyat of Rashi, because this Rashi is far from simple, as we'll soon see. But there is a ksaviyat, a manuscript of Rashi that I found was identified in a sefer I have, Yosef Halel. I don't have it in your source sheet, but he says the following words, Shelo Tomar, so you should not say, just like Rashi said Shelo Tomar earlier by Shabbos, Ho il petur min ha-maiser tehei petur af nabikurim. Since we know that during Shemitah there's no halacha to give maiser, so you might think there's a petur bikurim as well. Kach nemar kveshes bikurim maschah. So Rashi would be saying that you would have thought that it's similar to tumas and maiser, so it's not. There is a mitzvah bikurim during Shemitah. Now, there's a major problem with this Rashi, because where did Rashi get this from? If we look in the Mechilta, which is Rashi's source for many comments in Sefer Shmos, the Mechilta does in fact quote the drasha about Shabbos of the week, why it's mentioned here during Shemitah, and the Mechilta does mention the drasha about Shalosh Regalim to be Ola Regel, even though it's a year of Shemitah, but nowhere do we find in Chazal a drasha that Rashi seems to be telling us here, that the Torah wants you to know that you bring Bikurim during Shemitah. That's why we have the mitzvah Bikurim. Rashi extended the logic of the other drashos and went on a limb and gave us, you could say, his own drasha, which now is subject to quite a lot of controversy. There is a comment of the Tashbates. He lived closer to the time of Rashi, one of the Rishonim. The question was asked of him during Shemitah, how did they deal with issues like bringing Omer and Shtei HaLechem for the second day of Pesach and Shavuos, if after all things are not growing and everything is Hefker, and he goes on to say how that was done. And then he goes on and discusses Bikurim, and he quotes Rashi matter-of-factly, and he says, in fact, if they would bring Bikurim, not only would they bring Bikurim, they would also read the Parsha that is read along with the bringing of the Bikurim. So he basically read Rashi as we have it, and took it for granted that there is a mitzvah Bikurim during Shemitah. Who creates the major stir on this issue? It's the Maharal. The Maharal Miprag wrote a Pirush on Rashi called Gur Aryeh. And the Maharal, who lived later than the Tashbates and didn't have the Tashbates, you know, who had the Rashi in the 16th century, takes strong issue with this Rashi. And he says it couldn't be that Rashi said such a thing. It must be a mistake, a scribal error, Tola Sofer. And the case that the Maharal makes is because the language of the Pasuk in Mikra Bikurim, and you see in source 10 as it's written, person says when he brings Bikurim, Ve'ata, after talking about the history of the Jewish people and how we started out with humble beginnings, we have this on our Pesach Seder, and we came out of Mitzrayim finally, and we came to this land. Ve'ata, hinei hevesi es reshis pri adama, Hashem nasat li Hashem. And now I brought the first of the fruit of the ground that you, Hashem, have given me. Says the Maharal Miprag in source number 11, I don't get it. How could this be said during Shemitah? How could you bring Bikurim during Shemitah? It's a Tov Sofer. There is no such Rashi. Eich Shaykh, Sheyia Hashviyas Chai BeBikurim. She'ein Eich Kore Ani Kan. How can I read here with Bikurim? The Ata Hevesi Reishis Pri Adam Hashem Sati Li Hashem. What's the problem? Ha Lo Lo Nasan. It was not given to him. It's a pun here. Lo Lo Nasan. It wasn't given to this person. And therefore, Eich Shaykh She'chai BeBikurim. So the Maharal's critique seems to be based on the language of what a person would say when they bring Bikurim, which seems to be saying, I thank you for the fruit you've given me. Now, at first glance, we have to wonder, maybe there is no reading of the Parsha Bikurim. Maybe it's just bringing Bikurim. In fact, we know from Mishnah's Bikurim, those who are familiar with it, there are examples mentioned in early Mishnah Bikurim, of a person who brings Bikurim but doesn't have to read the Parsha of Mikra Bikurim. These are two separate mitzvos. In fact, there's a whole season between Sukkot and Hanukkah where the halacha is you bring Bikurim and you don't read the Parsha's Mikra Bikurim. And there are individual cases mentioned in the Mishnah of a person who can't say the words of the Parsha. So maybe all Rashi was telling us is that you have a mitzvah during Shavuos to bring Bikurim, but in fact, you wouldn't have to say these words. It wouldn't make sense to say these words. So why is the Maral so bothered by the comment of Rashi? And it occurred to me that probably the answer is because there's a big difference between an isolated case of an individual who, for whatever reason, that particular situation cannot allow him to use the formula that the Torah gives us, the text of Mikra Bikurim, or a limited period of time from as we said, from Sukkot to Hanukkah, where during those few months, there is no Mikra Bikurim. But here we're talking about an entire year, the Holy Shemitah year, that there should be a mitzvah only to bring Bikurim and not to recite the parsha. That, Maral felt, would be too far-fetched. That is not plausible. And therefore, the Maral feels that the entire mitzvah would not exist if you're going to talk about a mitzvah that would just have the potential of hava to bring it and not the potential of reading it. So therefore, the Maral feels that Rashi is incorrect. And as we noted, there is no source in Chazal for what Rashi is quoting, this drasha that Rashi is citing. Okay, many try to begin to push back against the Maral. And one of the suggestions made is by Rabbi Chaim Zalman Margolius, the Beis Ephraim, and he lived in the 18th century. And one of the points that he makes is as follows. How do we punctuate that pasuk? The pasuk that you see in source number 9. The ata hinei evesi espacious priha adama asher nasata li. The words asher nasata li, what are they modifying? That you have given me. One could say that they're modifying the fruit of the gland, the fruit that you've given me. Now, if that's the case, the Maral's point is well taken. The fruit is considered hefker. It's not mine. It's everybody's. But perhaps the words asher nasata li don't modify the pre, but modify the word ha'adama. In other words, the fruit is technically hefker during Shemitah, but the land is still mine. And therefore, he says, I'm bringing the fruit of the land that you gave me. So the comma, right, would have to be not after the word, it's not after Adama. The Adama flows into Hashem Nasata Li Hashem. It's the land that you gave me. The fruit was not given to me during Shemitah, but I brought fruit from land that I own. That is one of the suggestions that is mentioned. And perhaps, therefore, one could say these words justifiably during Shemitah. But in order to say that, we have to examine another question. What is the status of the land during Shemitah? If the Torah says that the fruit that grows, the produce of Shemitah, is available for everybody, so the produce is obviously available to everybody to take. What about the land where the produce is? Does the status of Hefker in some way infringe on the full extent of ownership of the land? After all, people are going to come and pick fruit, then they're able to come in, we'll see soon about this, and into my field and pick the fruit. And if the Torah has made the fruit available for everybody, the Torah has in some way retained, taken away, compromised the full extent of ownership of Bailus of the land as well. It's interesting, the Taz, in source number 13, he lived in the 17th century, where he brings the issue of the Maral of how could Rashi have said such a thing? This cannot exist, Bikurim cannot exist during Shemitah. Notice how he writes the critique of Rashi. In the third line in source 13 of Bigur Aryeh, that's the Maral, Kasaf, Shezev Vadai Tos Sofer, Tehech Yavi Bikurim Bishviyas, De'ena Takore Kanashina Satali, Ubishviyas Lo Nasan Lo, Osa Ha Adama. Now the Taz is focusing on the land. So even if you grant that the punctuation of the pasuk is asher nasatali, modifying the land, but it still is not going to work. The Taz is saying that Hashem did not give you the land during Shemitah as well. And this issue does come to fore in the next source, Talmud of the Ramban, the Mashal, the Nachas Yaakov, who wrote again a commentary in the 17th century on Rashi, where he says, I didn't find this chazal, this drasha that Rashi says, but we can explain it because you would have thought, and this is what he seems to be getting at, you would have thought that you don't have Bikurim, the halom mikriyat mascha b'shvius. He recognizes the point of the Taz, that it's not called your land, but he says, nevertheless, the Torah is coming and telling me, despite the fact that it's not quite your land, it's good enough for you to bring Bikurim. So he's recognizing there's some kind of an issue here regarding the land. Does the land belong to you or does the land not belong to you? Now, what does that mean? Does it or doesn't it? Is it land yours or is it not yours? And the answer is yes and no, as we alluded to before. In some regards, the land is still yours. If you want to dig, you want to do construction, if you want to use the land for some personal use, it's available to you. You own the land. But there's something about the land that's not fully yours, because the fact that typically you can restrict access to anyone who wants to trespass and come into your space, your ground. And during Shemitah, you can't do that. If someone wants to enjoy the fruit, they're able to come in. That allows, that diminishes, that compromises your full ownership. You don't have the full sense of bialus that you usually have on your land. And this is coming out of the Gemara in Adarin, where the case in the Gemara is a person would make a neder that nobody can benefit from my assets. If the person would make such a vow during Shemitah, so the Torah says, I mean, the Mishnah says that a person wants to come and enjoy the fruit, they can take the overhang of the trees from outside. They can stand outside your property and take what they want as their fruit because it's hefter. But it sounds like they can't walk into your property. And the question asked that by the Gemara, and here you get the sense of how the land is not fully yours, asks the Gemara in Source 15, Maishna to Ocham and Anotos. Why is it only that you can eat from what is leaning over outside? Why can you eat those fruit? The Peri Def Kerinu, because the fruit is ownerless. Says the Gemara, Aranami Afkara. The land is also Hefker. So it should be able, each person should be allowed to go into your property as well because it's Hefker. You can't make a nether to override that. Answers the Gemara, two answers. Ula says, we're talking about trees that are on the border. So therefore, if the fruit is on the tree and the tree is on the border, you don't have to go in. So you can go in. You can eat the fruit, pick the fruit by standing outside. The other answer is given, Gzeira, really really it could be a question, it could be fruit inside too, but you can't go in there because Gzeira Shema Yashav Amida, because you might end up staying too long. Now, what does too long mean? So there's two versions of the answer of the Gemara. One is what the Ran seems to say. Yashab Amida means the Torah only made it hefker, the land hefker, for purposes of picking fruit. If you are to pick the fruit and then you stay any longer that you need to pick the fruit, you are in violation. You're trespassing. You're not allowed to do that. Tosus takes it a little further. Tosus says the problem of Yashab Amida is after eating it. In other words, what the Torah allows the person outside to do is to enter the field of the other person and to pick and to eat. He wants to take his time eating, he can do that too. But once he's done eating, he's got to leave. So that's also what the Rambam says. The Rambam says, as we see in Source 18, though if kira osa Torah el kozman shaperos betocha, it's only when the fruit is there and you're eating it and you are afraid zereshem ayisha acha sheyocha. If you stay past, you overstay your welcome and you ate your fruit and then you stayed, then it's a problem of getting benefit from the person's property. So what we see in this Gemara is, in a certain way, the land has also become ownerless. The land, you cannot hold to your same standards during Shemitah about keeping people out the way you do during the rest of the year. And this partly is the question. So what is this halacha when a person says, when he brings Bikurim, even if you assume that the Ashena Satali goes on the land, but it's not fully yours either. You see, there are certain aspects that other people have a real kinyan, you could say. Some achronim refer to this as a dekel aperos. A person can own a palm tree for the fruit. It's not just a right to eat the fruit. Because if that were the case, then the nether could override that. But it sounds like the other people who come in have an actual kinyan in the karka for the sake of eating the fruit. In which case, your full ownership has been compromised, which is why perhaps you can't justify saying Hashem Asatali, even if it's going on the land. Interesting is that the Arachayim, in his commentary to Chumash, makes the following diuk, the following inference in the language of the Pasuk in Parshas Kisavo. The Torah says, if you go to the land, Asher Hashem Elokecha nosein lach, or nosein lacha, so the Arachayim says, because there is a time, a year, when Hashem has not really given you the land. Hashem has retained the land for himself, because it's for everybody. And that's the year of Shemitah. And therefore, the Pasuk is trying to imply to us, L'zeh ba dvaro hatov, she'eino mitzaveh, or eino mitzvah, el alzman hanesin alach, that only is a mitzvah bikurim during the window of time that Hashem has given you the land, which is six of the 7 years, but the Shnas HaShemitah, because it's not really yours, the land is not fully yours, therefore there is no mitzvah bikurim. The Or HaChaim makes no mention of the Rashi in Chumash, but he makes a blanket statement on the other side of the issue. There is no mitzvah bikurim during Shemitah, and the point seems to be that the land is not fully given to you. Hashem has retained it for himself. Okay, so what else can we do to defend Rashi? We have the issue of the fruit not being yours, we have the issue of the land not being quite yours, and we have the Rashi's comment that there is a mitzvah bikurim during Shemitah. What else has been suggested, perhaps to defend Rashi, to explain why there is in fact a mitzvah of bikurim? So there is a Rambam that is quoted by a number of Achronim that perhaps can shed light on this issue. The Rambam has the following two examples. A person purchases fruit that is detached from the ground, and separate from that, he buys the land that the fruit grew from. But notice, he didn't own the land and the fruit when it grew. But independently, he ends up acquiring fruit, and he acquires the land as well. Says the Rambam, he may bring bikurim because he has fruit that grew on land, and he now owns the fruit, and he owns the land. Another case that the Rambam brings is a person sells fruit that grew on his land, but he did not sell the land. Then, in that situation, nobody can bring bikurim. The seller cannot bring bikurim because he doesn't own the fruit anymore. The buyer cannot bring bikurim because he doesn't own the land that the fruit grew from. Suppose the seller buys the fruit back. So now he has the land and he has the fruit, and he got the fruit back after selling it. Says the Rambam, he can bring bikurim because as of now, he has the land, he has the fruit grew from the land, and put it all together, and everything is fine. So therefore, a number of Achronim say, why not simply answer for Rashi a simple thing? And this is what's mentioned here in the source number 21, again by the Shem Ephraim. Once a person takes the fruit and acquires it, because Hefker doesn't mean that I don't have a right to it, it means that my right is equal to everybody else. Okay, fruit grew on this land. I own the land. Let's just say it's enough to say I own the land because it's in some respects I do own the land. Now the fruit is in fact available for everybody to take, including me. So I go ahead and I acquire the fruit. I have the fruit, I have the land, and therefore there's a mitzvah to bring bikurim because it's no different than the case of the Rambam. Now, of course, one could perhaps distinguish between the cases, but either way, this is another possibility why you can justify what Rashi seems to say. Again, let's move on to another. Again, you see how every one of these points can be obviously taken to further detail. Another interesting possibility that could very much bear on our discussion. When we talk about the status of Hefker during Shemitah, what does that mean? The Torah gives us a mitzvah. Everyone who owns land, who has fruit on his land, has to comply with this mitzvah of having the fruit be hefker. Does that mean, as the Minchas Chinuch raises this question in source 22, the mitzvah is the Torah tells every landowner, you are obligated to do a formal hefker, you are to be mafkir, the fruit of your land, for everybody to have. Therefore, the mitzvah is fulfilled and the hefker takes effect because you make it hefker. Suppose a person decides not to listen to the Torah's guidelines, doesn't follow the Torah's script, doesn't make it hefker, then it doesn't become hefker, because it's only when you make it hefker that the hefker takes effect. According to this, if you didn't make it hefker, it could have a chiyuv of trumas or maestros, perhaps, because if you go with the reason that a hefker is pater, shvius is pater because of hefker, you didn't make it hefker. Or do we say not that way? Even if you don't make it hefker, the Torah made it hefker. And again, that means that it happens no matter what. The mitzvah is just for you to go along with what the Torah said and not to push back. But basically, the hefker happens regardless of whether you officially make it hefker or not. Again, various nafkaminas that Minchas Chinuch mentions, someone would come in and take the fruit that you never actually made hefker. Would he be stealing? Because if it's not hefker, he has no right to it. He should have done better. He should have made it hefker. Or do we say no? The fact is, the Torah made it hefker regardless of whether you yourself went ahead and followed suit. So again, without getting into the many, many aspects of this, the Minchas Chinuch thinks that this is a question of Achronim, a machlokes Achronim between the Beis Yosef and the Maharit. I say the Maharit, it's also his father, the Mabit, contemporaries of the Beis Yosef. And he thinks that this machlokes that has to do with a non-Jew's field during Shemitah, famous issue that's very relevant to Halacha L'maisa too, in terms of what is the status of Shemitah for a non-Jew. So he thinks that this is that machlokas, because a non-Jew has no mitzvah of the Torah to make it a hefker, but if the Torah made it a hefker regardless, it might take effect nonetheless. And therefore, that would be the question. Says the Maharam Shik, Mamshik was a Talmud of the Chasam Sofer in the 19th century. He says, our Rashi, our question, the Maral's issue, would now tie into this machokas that we, Minchas Chinuch, attributes to the Beis Yosef and the Maharit. Does the Torah require you to make it hefker, and without that it doesn't become hefker, or does the Torah make it hefker regardless of what you do? Says the Mamshik, this is the issue. According to the Beis Yosef, who holds that the peros are yours and the Torah wants you to make it hefker, so then the proof of the Gur Aryeh is not a proof. That was his question. Hashem didn't give it to you. Hashem gave it to you. You have a mitzvah to make it hefker. Yes, but there's a mitzvah of bikurim. So first you take bikurim, it's yours. That you don't make hefker. Everything else, you have to make hefker. So there's no problem. It is yours. Until you make it hefker, it remains yours. Whatever is bikurim, you never made hefker, and therefore the mitzvah bikurim can go forward. Whatever else is left is what you are to make hefker. But if you assume the other side, that the hefker is a status that the Torah imposed, whether you yourself do it or not, it is hefker, then the Maral's question returns, and then we're back to our question. All right, let's go to another relevant aspect of this, and that is by Rabbi Pesach Frank from Yerushalayim, the 1800s into 1900s, he has a very interesting idea of why we could have Bikurim apply during Shemitah, and that's because it's an issue of timing. When does Bikurim take effect? We noted before the Mishnah Bikurim says b'mechubar, when the fruit is still on the tree. At what stage of the development of the fruit does the status of Bikurim take effect? So the Mishnah describes, Source 24, that a person goes down to his field, he sees a fig, for example, that has begun to emerge. Eshkol is a cluster of grapes, shabikir, a rimon, a pomegranate, kosro begemi, he ties it with a reed, and he says, Hare elu bikurim. That's the halacha of mechubar. Says the Bar Tanura, in Source 25, the fruit does not yet have to become fully developed. Because the pasuk says, when you bring the bikurim, you say hevesi esreishis pri ha'adama. You're calling it a pri at the time that you're bringing it. Bishas hava hu pri. However, bishas hafrasha, when it's being designated as bikurim, it doesn't have to be a pri. It can be an early stage, which is still unripe. He calls this bosar pagin. These are early stages of the fruit's development, and the status of bikurim takes effect at that very early stage of the development of the fruit. The Rav uses the term, as you see, boser, the Tosfos Yontif says even something earlier than that, called smadar. These are early stages of the flowering of the fruit, and another stage of unripe fruit. It's not yet developed as a fruit. It's certainly not edible. It's already bikurim. What is the halacha regarding Shemitah? So this is an interesting question. At what point is it considered to be the status of fruit of Shemitah for the various halachos of Shemitah, such as you're not allowed to waste fruit of Shemitah, you're not allowed to have to treat it with Kedusha, and the status of Hefker that we're discussing? So from what you see in the Rambam that you have quoted here, there is a mention based on the Mishnayos. The Rambam talks about Bikurim, as you see in Source 27. And then in Source 28, the Rambam says that once the fruit begins to form, you're not allowed to cut down the tree. Why not? Forget about Baltashkes. Let's say we got around the Baltashkes issue. But the problem is you are wasting the potential here that lies within this fruit that hasn't yet come to maturation. Because Shemitah, the fruit is holy and can't be wasted. As the Rambam quotes. So once that begins to happen, you're now going to chop down the tree. Now the Rambam gives us certain points in the development based on the Gemara that you cannot chop the tree down. The question is, are these stages adin d'oraisa? In which case you're also talking about a very early stage that already has a status of shvius produce. Or perhaps the Rambam says, is only talking about din d'rabanan, because he notes that the Kiryat Sefer in Source 29 tells us that the prohibition formally begins mishiyaschel lasos pri, and he says, kosh shelo higia lasos pri, if it's not yet at the point that you can enjoy it and eat it and taste it like fruit, it's not called something edible. Says Matzi Pesach Frank, mid the Oraisa, the status of Shemitah produce only takes effect when you have a real full fruit that's edible, and that's when you can't waste its potential and you can't do with it something which would not optimize the potential what you should do with that fruit. But if it's not yet at the stage that it's called la'achla, then you can't talk about an iser of lo lehefsed. And therefore, the fact that there are isurim that exist beforehand are not d'oraisa, says Rav Tzvi, it's only d'rabbana. So from the Torah perspective, says Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, the status of bikurim precedes the status of Shemitah produce, which brings with it the status of hefker, that everyone can take it. And therefore, Rashi makes perfect sense, because one could certainly see why the mitzvah of bikurim can apply during Shemitah, because the status of bikurim can already take effect before the status of hefker, which takes place subsequently, and therefore there is no contradiction between the status of hefker, which comes later, and the mitzvah of bikurim that already took effect from before. Says Rabbi Pesach Frank, that would answer another question that we raised earlier in the shir. We noted that the Mishnah does not mention as one of the examples of what bikurim has over Truma Umayser, the fact that Bikurim applies during Shemitah and Truma Umayser do not. Why doesn't it mention that in the list of the Mishnah? Says Rashi Pesach Frank, it does. Because what does it mention? Shabikurim Nikdin B'Mechubar. That's back in Source 5. Bikurim applies and exists in the status of being on the tree. So therefore, by saying that, the Mishnah already encompasses what we just mentioned, that because of that, that Bikurim already exists in Mechubar, and even at an early stage of its being attached, therefore, that's why it applies during Shemitah, unlike Truma Umayser, and therefore, there is no need to mention a separate Nafkamina. Okay, so these are some of the main issues. Let me briefly mention one other issue that the Minchas Chinuch and others raise, as far as why maybe there should not be a mitzvah Bikurim during Shemitah. And this has to do with a Gemara in Bechoros, in Source number 31. And you can see each one of these issues, if we wanted, we could expand on much more. The Gemara discusses the following case. If you have money that has status of Kedusha Shavias, because the din is that fruit of Shavias takes on a status of Kedusha that can transfer to money if there's an exchange for that fruit with money, the money has to be restricted in what you can use it for. So this money of Shavias purchases an animal that now has a firstborn. And typically a firstborn animal that's unblemished has a status of a carbon that's given to the Kohen, and certain parts of the animal are burnt on the Mizbeach as a normal carbon would be brought. Says Rav Chisda, Behema Shavias, an animal that has status of Shemitah Kedusha, is pater min habechora. If that animal has a firstborn, offspring, it's not kadosh as a bechor. And the reason is because la'achla amarachman. The Torah says you should take the produce of Shvias, it's meant la'achla v'lo esreifa. That's the girsa that we have in our Gemara, not to be burnt. Because what happens is you're going to take parts of the animal and they're going to get burnt on the Mizbeach. And that's antithetical to Shemitah. So there's no halacha of Kedushas Bechor on a behema of Shvias. The Gemara has a question. The Gemara says, what about the following halacha? Nesivet, a person who eats the dough that has Kedushas Shvias, because the produce, the wheat, grew during Shvias, and you didn't take off challah. The halacha is that you have to be mafish challah, and if you don't do that, there's a chi of misa b'dei shamayim, because it's tevel. If a person would eat the dough of Shvias produce, of chal of dough, and not take off challah, there's a capital punishment midishamayim, chayiv misa. But why should that be? Why should it be halacha of taking off challah from Shemitah produce? After all, what happens if the challah becomes tame? You have to burn it. But the Torah says, la'achla b'lo esreifa. So shouldn't that mean that there should be no halacha to begin with of challah for isas Shvias? So why is it different than the case of Bechor? Answers the Gemara, there's Gzeras HaKasuf, L'doro Seichem. It says in the Parash of Chal and Parash of Shlach, L'doro Seichem, it applies even during Shemitah. Asks the Gemara, let's learn out Bechor from Chala, Ligma Minei? No. Hasam Iker L'Achila, Hacha Iker L'Sveifa. There, the main function is to eat. It could become tame, and then you have to burn it. Here, by a carbon, the part of the designation of the carbon is that part of it is going to be burnt on a mizbeach. So leaving this Gemara now in the back of our minds, we ask ourselves, what about Bikurim? Bikurim doesn't have a pasuk of a Dor HaSeichem. And Bikurim has the same issue that if it becomes Tameh, you have to burn it. And the Rambam quotes this in a later halacha. You see this in Surah 34. It has a status of Truma in a certain sense. It has to be treated with Kedusha. And if something becomes Tameh, you have to burn it. So if that's the case, La'achla below is Reifa. So the Avnei Nezer and others relate to this question and give a simple answer. And the answer could be that the Gemara had the question, let's learn out from Chala to the case of Bechora. And the Gemara says you can't, because by Chala, the Iker is for Achila, and by Bechora, the Iker is L'Sreifa. Well, what about Bikurin? It's not meant to get, become Tamei and have to get burnt. It could happen. And therefore, you can simply learn out from Chala. The Torah is teaching us by Chala that it does apply during Shemitah. So by extension, we can learn out the same would be by Bikurim as well. Furthermore, says Yavnei Nezer, it's two steps removed from becoming Tamei, because it could be doesn't have yet the conditioning that it needs to become Tamei. Therefore, there's no issue of La'achla B'lo L'Sreifa. Just to revisit the Rashi that we started with, because Rashi, again, plain and simple, seems to say that there is a mitzvah bikurim during Shemitah, but yet we have all these various issues that we brought in. The Chazon Ish is also uncomfortable with the implications of Rashi, that there should be a mitzvah bikurim during Shemitah, but he has a Rashi, and he doesn't want to say, like the Maral, that it's a Tohu Sofer. So he has a creative way of reading the Rashi. He says, you know what Rashi means? It's not produce of Shemitah. Produce of Shemitah, what grows on the tree during Shemitah, is not to be brought as Bikurim for the various reasons that we've discussed. The fruit isn't yours, the land isn't yours, and so on. Rather, Rashi is discussing the following. The fruit grew during the sixth year. The status of the fruit, because the developmental stage that made it to decide what year it's assigned to, already has been reached, the maturation, during year six. Therefore, it's not subject to the laws of Shemitah. But you haven't yet brought it as Bikurim. Now you have that produce from year six. During year seven, comes Shavuos and on, you want to bring your fruit from year six as Bikurim. Why would you think that you shouldn't have to bring it? Because the whole season of Shnas HaShemitah is not a time of simcha. It's not a time to gather your fruit. You don't have that much. It's not a gathering of your grain, of your produce. Therefore, maybe even though the produce is from year six, but there is no, the whole context of Shemitah year is not a time of Bikurim, even if the fruit is from year six. That's the Chiddush of Rashi, that you bring Bikurim during Shemitah on the produce of year six, but certainly the produce of year seven, the Chazon Ish assumes, would not be subject to Bikurim. Okay, so we have basically done a lot of different points relating to the larger issue. Just to quickly summarize, we have the comment of Rashi that we don't have a source in Chazal for, but Rashi seems to go on the record that there is a mitzvah Bikurim during Shemitah. We have a number of considerations of why that should not be so. The issue of the Maharal. First of all, actually, before that, the issue of whether we call Bikurim mitzvah Tuya Ba'aretz, and we know that Tumas and Maris don't apply during Shemitah, but then again, Bikurim might be called an individual obligation, not a mitzvah Tuya Ba'aretz. We have the Maharal's critique of Rashi, that you can't say, HaPri Adam Asher Nasateli, the fruit is not yours. We had the consideration that maybe Hashem HaSateli goes on the land and the land is yours. So we discussed the question of, is the land yours? Is it not yours? In some respects, the land is not yours. In some respects, the land is yours. We discussed the question of maybe if you acquire the fruit after the fact, that's also considered good enough, like the case of the Rambam. We discussed the question of whether Hefker is the Torah's Hefker or your obligation that you make it Hefker. If you don't make it Hefker, it's not Hefker, and therefore that's why you could bring the Bikurim. We discussed the question of the timing, that perhaps the status of Bikurim takes effect before the status of Perish Shmias for Hefker. We discussed the issue of La'achla below the Sreifa that we saw with Bechor, and maybe that's the reason why there shouldn't be a mitzvah Bikurim, but then again, it could be better than the case of Bechor, and more analogous to the case of Chala. And then we had the Chazon Ish and how he wanted to reinterpret Rashi. Just to perhaps conclude on a more hashkafic level, because basically we're discussing not just the halacha, but the underlying idea behind the mitzvah. And from that perspective, you could perhaps make the case that Bikurim and Shemitah are like two sides of the same coin. Because if you look at, carefully at the Chinuch, and the last two sources give you the Sefer HaChinuch, who gives us reasons for mitzvos, the reason for Bikurim in source 36, the reason for Shemitah in source 37, there is a common message. Bikurim gives us the message, reinforces the point that everything we have is granted from Hashem. It's not about me. It's not Kochi Ba'otzim Yadi. It comes from Hashem. Shemitah reinforces the idea of bitachon, trusting in Hashem, knowing that Hashem owns everything, kili ha'aretz. Even if we have the land, it's not really fully ours all the time, not just during Shemitah. Therefore, it's not such a big deal to give up some kind of sense of ownership of the fruit, perhaps of the land. And therefore, even if Bikurim is not formally brought during Shemitah, they certainly get the message of Bikurim conveyed through Shemitah itself. Just as we had a Havamina regarding Shabbos, that you wouldn't have to keep Shabbos during Shemitah because the whole year is a year of Shabbos. So the Torah says, no, you have to keep Shabbos as well. So when it comes to Bikurim, even if you assume at the end of the day, not like the way Rashi says, that there is no mitzvah Bikurim, but the idea is that the message of Shemitah is so much part and parcel of the experience of Shemitah that you don't need Bikurim to convey that message because it comes through loud and clear through the observance of Shemitah itself. So we should all be meriting to be internalizing these important messages, a basic emuna, basic bitachon in our own lives, Mirz Hashem. And we have, again, much more to talk about on other occasions. And again, you can read all about it, Mirz Hashem, in the Torah to Go for Shavuos. Thank you all for listening, and have a wonderful day, and Shavuot Tov.